Madam Secretary, do you know how many children have died in CBP custody under your tenure as Secretary?
Yes, so we have the numbers for CBP and ICE.
Can you give me the numbers of how many children have died?
Yes, I can. If you'll give me 1 second, I just don't want to misspeak. But this last year we had, or so far this year, we've had three, as you know, in CBP custody.
So far, Madam Secretary, are you expecting more children to die?
No, ma'am. I just want to be accurate with the time.
Democratic Congresswoman Nanette Barragan there in one of the many tense exchanges between Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen and House Democrats yesterday.
Have you spoken to their families at all, Madam Secretary?
I have not spoken with their families, no ma'am.
The hearing came just the day after U.S. Customs and Border Protection released new data. More than 76,000 migrants tried to enter the U.S. at the southern border in February, the largest number in more than a decade. But what makes this group unique is that the majority are families, parents with children, many coming from Central America who say they're fleeing poverty and violence. It's a group most vulnerable to the dangerous journey. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
We have now apprehended or encountered more families in just 5 months and 5 days than last year's record total.
That's Kevin McAleenan, commissioner of CBP, and he told reporters this week that the system is at a quote-unquote breaking point. Border officials, he says, are unable to keep up with the increasing demands for resources. In December, two children ages 7 and 8 died in CBP custody, and in February, a Honduran woman delivered a stillborn baby in ICE detention. While McAleenan also announced changes to how the agency will get migrants proper care, in studio today we have Sherry Fink, a physician and correspondent for The New York Times, who's been at the southern border reporting on medical care for migrants and the dangerous holes in the system. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Also with us is Dr. Carlos Gutierrez, a pediatrician in El Paso, Texas, who's been caring for migrants at the border since 2014 as a volunteer. Carlos, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
You're welcome.
So, Sherry, first, give us the overview. What medical services are available to migrants who've crossed the border?
Well, it's been very patchy. So there are just a few places where migrants are so-called processed. This is the temporary detention right after somebody gets taken into custody. It's supposed to only last 3 days. Now it's lasting much longer. And only a few of those processing facilities actually have licensed health providers. There are also about 6% of Border Patrol agents are emergency medical technicians. Otherwise, they're just relying on local hospitals and the screening to, you know, sort of pick up who might be sick, who might need urgent care, has not been very comprehensive.
And Carlos, I'm wondering, you're a doctor who's working as a volunteer on the border. Tell us about your role in treating folks there. Where are you treating patients?
We get involved once the patients are released from Border Patrol custody. Then they are released to about 20 to 22 hospitality centers in the El Paso area, shelters. At that point, we are notified. There's a group of us, physicians, nurse practitioners. We are notified that Border Patrol is releasing anywhere between 500 and 700 individuals per day. And we are called by the different shelters when they need us for any medical support. We go and examine the children, the adults, for a variety of illnesses such as upper respiratory infections, diarrhea, dehydration, and other more serious infections that require hospitalization.
What is the United States' responsibility for this population?
Well, it goes back to our Constitution, lawyers were explaining to me, which guarantees sort of just like you would think if somebody's in a jail, anytime that somebody's in the custody of authorities, they can't go seek health care. So we are required, and I don't hear anybody who's in charge disputing this idea that we need to keep people safe. And also people might be wondering just in terms of the people coming out of custody. So these are mostly families that are being apprehended that we're talking about today. And because there are so many, the longer term detention facilities are full. And so generally they get processed in these Border Patrol facilities and then they're released, you know, and then they'll be going on their way with an ankle bracelet, GPS, and a court date in the future.
And so, Carlos, you mentioned some of the illnesses that you're looking for. Are you noticing a change since you've been doing this work? Is there more stress? Is there more toxic stress? Is there more trauma? That came up in the hearing yesterday as well.
Since we're seeing more and more individuals being released, we're seeing more and more serious illnesses. We've had our share of severe diabetes with blood sugars up to close to 800. We've had individuals who've fallen off part of our border wall that we have here in El Paso. I personally took care of a 32-year-old lady who fractured her spine, her ribs, and her pelvis. And we pretty much had to take care of her at one of the shelters after she had been evaluated in the emergency rooms. Presently, we're taking care of a flesh-eating bacteria individual. We've had quite a few mumps, chickenpox, contagious infections like that.
And I'm wondering, Carlos, in your work, are you coordinating at all with ICE or with Customs and Border Protection?
You know what? Unfortunately, they have had nothing to do with us. We have begged to be involved in the process right as they are delivered to the Border Patrol custody to no avail. And what has happened after the deaths of the two children is that individuals from the Health and Human Services got together with some individuals from our local area, and they decided that they would contract with the Coast Guard, I believe, to provide some medical services while in Border Patrol custody. And after that, the individuals are released, and as soon as they're released from the Border Patrol custody and sent to our shelters, that's where we take over. And the unfortunate thing is that the medical personnel at the Border Patrol facilities are not allowed to communicate with us on the outside at all, which would make the care of these individuals a lot more seamless and structured.
Sherry, you had a point you wanted to get in.
That is one of the major problems that I saw all across the border. The Coast Guard deployments have ended. Those were very temporary after the kids died, and now they're sort of some U.S. Public Health Service people being surged in, but there needs to be a longer-term solution. That's still in the planning stages 2 months after the kids died. Another big problem is that, and I'm sure you've seen this, Dr. Gutierrez, is that Border Patrol is often and usually taking away the medicines of people who are coming across the border, just as they have to sort of confiscate the belongings. And those medicines aren't always replaced. And that's why children are coming out of custody, or people with chronic diseases like diabetes with really high blood sugars, because they're not necessarily having access to the medicines that they may even be bringing into custody. So that's another really big problem.
And I'm wondering also, Sherry, to pick up on that, and Carlos, you can also weigh in here, about the local medical infrastructure. How much of this is local hospitals, first responders, EMTs, for example, coming to help fill the gap?
Well, I did visit a number of emergency rooms along the border, and they say that in the places where these detention facilities don't have health providers, when somebody is visibly sick, the Border Patrol agents are bringing them to the local hospital, and they're able to cope. It's not huge, huge numbers, but sometimes that's just really unnecessary. You take away somebody's medicine, then you have to take them to the emergency room, the highest cost type of care, to get that replaced. And then often that medicine doesn't go with them when the person is released. So it could be solved in a much more efficient and a cheaper fashion if there was better medical support when people were in custody.
Also, Carlos, I want to ask you about this population in particular. The reason this is news is really because these are families. The change here is we're talking about parents and children. What does that do to your work? Are there specific things you're looking for with when it comes to children, when it comes to potentially babies and women who could potentially be pregnant themselves? Like, does that change the dynamic for your work on the border right now?
Being a pediatrician, you'd think that all I would do is do the children, but we have to take care of adults, and we have to do medicine that we hadn't really done in a long time. And we have to be prepared for any physical problems that these patients may present with, and also mental problems, because they've been put under such stress. Amazingly, when we see these individuals in the shelters, their attitude is so upbeat because they have finally found a place where they are welcome, where they receive a hug. And a lot of times the things that we physicians do is give them a good handshake, a good hug, and tell them that we are there for them. And they are so thrilled, so happy with what we do at that point.
Sherry, you're nodding to that. You agree?
Oh, yeah. My gosh. People, yes, they're very grateful. They're very kind. They just want a better life. Obviously, they want to escape, many of them escaping violence and poverty. And so when you meet them firsthand, they're just so compelling as human beings.
Sherry, you spoke with medical professionals who are working inside these border facilities. What did they tell you?
They had some frustrations as well. One was the when these medicines were confiscated from people and people had really important health problems that they had brought their medicines for, these health professionals felt like it was a big problem to figure out what they were on before those medicines were confiscated to get the medicines from local pharmacies. And then often they would leave a note for border agents saying, you know, please, when you release or transfer this person, make sure the medicine goes with them. And often that wouldn't happen. That's a huge frustration. Also, sometimes some of those health professionals said that the, you know, sort of law enforcement prerogative came first, sometimes really at a cost to safety. So one health professional was telling me that she would say this person needs to go to an emergency room, and 2 or 3 hours later, that person would still be there. Several times she said a woman complained of having been raped, and she said the agent said, you know, that person doesn't need to go to the hospital unless the rape happened here. And of course, anyone who's a health professional knows you need to check for pregnancy, for trauma. You could treat that person for to prevent sexually transmitted diseases. So these were things where the health professionals felt almost like ethically compromised, or that they were working within an environment where they couldn't fully practice.
I want to bring up an unfortunate topic, though, a difficult one, which is how are we going to pay for all this?
So there has been, I think everybody's saying we need more money, no matter what side of the political aisle. So in that budget bill that finally passed when the government reopened, there was about $200 million put in there to increase the contract medical services so that you could have much more efficient and better and safer care for people who are coming into custody. And the Congress also asked the CBP to report back on some better standards. They're giving them 60 days. So we'll see what happens. I should also say, and we should make sure to say, the Centers for Disease Control has gone out and looked, and they have not found any alarming public health threats amongst this population. It's just the usual things that, especially when you get lots of people packed together, they're going to have flu, they're going to have infections. And, you know, when you have that many people, populations do need health care. So people should just know it's not, they're not bringing some scary new things into the country.
And just, we have a little less than a minute, Carlos. If there was one thing you could get from CBP or ICE to improve the medical care that you're offering, what would that be?
To me, it would be access into the Border Patrol facilities to be able to care for these individuals as soon as they are captured. That would make the care a lot, lot better.
Dr. Carlos Gutierrez is a pediatrician in El Paso, Texas, who's been caring for migrants at the border since 2014 as a volunteer. And Sherry Fink is a correspondent for the New York Times and a physician. Her story about this issue is out in the Times now. Thank you so much for both of you for talking with me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.